Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 10 of Voices from the Dark. Today's episode features artists number 8, and I have today with me a poet, our first poet on the show. This poet goes by the name of Mike, and I'll let him introduce himself later. So usually I have some announcements. I got no announcements today because today's episode number 10. It's sort of a milestone. Pretty happy to actually get to this point. We are recording from an amazing bar in Berlin, in Neukölln, which I always feel weird about saying that name, even though I live here. Neukölln sounds weird when I say it. Mm. I've definitely mispronounced it. From the Black Lodge, which is basically an amazing bar with great atmosphere and deco, basically, that is based on the Twin Peaks Black Lodge. So if you know Twin Peaks, then you should definitely check out this bar in Berlin. So, without further ado, my guest, I will let him introduce himself. Mike, who are you?
How are you doing, Steve? Thank you very much for inviting me on this amazing podcast. I've been a listener for quite a while. And always wanted to come on board and have a few words with you and share a beer in this fine establishment of the Black Lodge. So you said I was a poet, which is interesting. I don't think I've ever been introduced as a poet before.
It's the first time for everything.
It sounds nice, though. It sounds very nice. And I have to say, whenever I write poetry, I feel great. I feel like incredibly creative, but also in a structured way, because obviously poetry is not free flowing like you can in when you write. Like I also write short stories, and you're a lot more free to kind of write what you want in poetry. Mm. There's definitely a structure that you've got to keep into. But yeah, so I do enjoy poetry, and I think it's something that I'll do a lot more of, along with the short stories and the other things that I get up to. Yeah,
that's great. Yeah. Full disclosure, Mike and I used to work together. We don't have to name names, but so Mike, this is my first time even knowing and realizing that Mike is a poet, or you know, I think I knew that you wrote short stories. Maybe we had conversations about that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of news to me. So I'm very interested to hear more from a personal level. You know,
yeah.
So I'm really happy to hear that you're a poet. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Now, poets don't tend to make a lot of money, so they kind of, I think they often, you know, it's something they keep to themselves. It's a hobby. It's a pastime. I think really, poetry is kind of, I wouldn't say gone out of fashion, but there's not that much poetry in the world today, or great poetry. I think probably rap is probably what we call poetry in the modern world. But in schools, yeah, it's just the way you're taught poetry. You actually kind of grow to hate it. And you can say that about a lot of subjects. I think your first introduction to English, maths, and across the board are subjects that you grow to despise because it's a burden. That,
okay, so that it's interesting. Well, it's good that you mentioned the school system and education in this field. Where are you from? That should probably give people a little bit more understanding of what you're talking about.
Yeah. I'm actually from Ireland, from Dublin. And so it's Ireland is still a very Catholic country. Not so much now as it used to be 10 years ago, but still the school I went to was a Catholic school. And very, very strict. Only boys' school as well, which kind of sets the tone for the education. And it's really not the kind of place that is open or conducive to creativity, I would say. The opposite. It puts a stranglehold on how you think and how you want to think and the ways you think. I think you're put really in a box in our system, and I can't understand why it's taken us so long to get to the next stage of education, where it's more open, it's more project based, it's less regurgitation of information, which you know, the status quo that's kind of suits them, doesn't it? It feeds into their more proletariats for the system.
So they're just churning out robots or whatever.
Basically,
Proletariats.
Yeah.
So you've spoken about who you are, your Mike from Ireland, your poet. So what do you write about? What's your poetry about? Like, what is it? What is it when you say you're a poet and that you write poetry? What is that for you? What forms
so
does it take?
For me, I do quite personal poems. So the last one I did was a poem about my brother, for my brother, really. Mm. For Christmas, and it was kind of a recollection of the great times we had, both with him and my dad, and different family stuff we did, and wrapped it all into just kind of a nice little piece for him to remember the good times that we've had. So that's how I see poetry. It's kind of it's a reflection on life. And yeah, my style is always quite personal. Well, not always. I've also written this one, which is kind of tongue in cheek about.
Is this the World Cup poem?
About the World Cup poem, which I just did yesterday. So it's not a masterpiece or anything.
Okay.
But so I think you can have a bit of fun with poetry as well.
Okay.
It doesn't always need to be that sentimental or hard hitting and. Like most of my short stories tend to be kind of humorous, and I always try to put on a humorous lens as much as I can, because making people laugh, I think, is a remedy to today's ills.
Okay, I'm definitely going to ask you more about that.
And
you mentioned before we started recording that you might be reading this World Cup poem, so I'm interested to hear that.
Yeah.
So you say that your poetry is personal and that it's for examining or re-examining life, or
just more of a reflection.
Yeah. And so, who are you making this for? Is this only for you? I mean, you said you want people to laugh. That you think that laughing is a good remedy to society's ills. So, you know, who is this for? Really, are you trying to get this to other people, or is this more for you, really the question is, when you create a particular piece, do you have an audience in mind, or is it yourself, like to please yourself?
Yeah, mostly it's
or none of that.
Yeah, sometimes it's really done really right. Okay, well the ones that are personal, it's obviously for say family or loved ones, but and the rest, I think it's just open. It's more just for the enjoyment of writing it, and then amongst kind of friends and family more than anything. I haven't got to the point where I've really pushed it into different platforms or anything
into the world.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So,
well, maybe. So I know that you have also a YouTube channel that you started recently.
Yeah, I've got a YouTube channel.
Do you do
as well.
Your own poetry on there as well?
Actually, that channel is part of a series where I just read 2 pages of a new book every day for 365 days. I actually just started a week ago, but it's just because I thought it was kind of interesting, because you can really tell if you're going to like a book within, 2-3 pages, if you like the style of the writer. And of course, you can go and look online at a PDF, but it's also kind of handy to just hop on, hear someone, sit back, have a glass of wine, read, get them to read to you, and then see if this is something you want to read more about. So I'm going to try and stay committed to that for the next 365 days.
That's cool.
Minus 10 or whatever it is now.
Yeah, the schedules, man. I feel that with this podcast. You know, it's like I really want to keep to the schedule, and you really have to in some way just do it.
Yeah.
I really like that idea. So it's basically, I like the premise, which is that you can generally get a sense of whether or not you want to read a book by reading just two or three pages. I really like that concept, that premise.
Yeah.
And I do think that it is in some ways true. So what you're doing is actually a helpful thing, you know, and especially if you have access to 365 books, which most of us do. You really have like a something that you can craft there. So I don't know if that's poetry or what, but it's definitely artistic, and I like that. I love, that's why I started this artist series, and, you know, I love hearing shit like that. And I think other people benefit from that. Like, we all need some kind of creative outlet.
Absolutely,
So what else, Mike? So you basically write for yourself and your family. What's the topics that you write about? Like, what's the, like, your, I don't want to sound cheesy, but like top five or whatever. It's like, what's close to your heart?
Yeah. If you had asked me that question a couple of months back, I always would have said comedic short stories was number one. And I guess it's probably thereabouts. But for some reason, I've taken a turn into the more darker themes. For instance, the last one I wrote was about a wife that had been abused for many years, and she eventually just kills her husband in a fit of rage and leaves the home. So it was kind of quite dark.
Your own voices from the dark.
Well, I thought I needed to mention that story.
Yeah, for sure.
Given the podcast that it is. And I don't know, I think also it's nice to write dark themes as well. It's somewhat cathartic, and I think it's also it touches into a part of the human psyche, because everyone's split. There's good and evil in every person. There's a side to people.
That sounded so Catholic.
Hope the devil's not creeping in here.
No, let him creep in.
So I think it's quite nice to write that touches on those the side to the psyche.
Yeah, I totally agree. If anybody who's following this podcast should know that I'm a horror writer, and the dark stories are pretty much all I'm about. So I love what they can achieve, you know. Mm-hmm. I feel like they can achieve everything, because you can have everything in a horror. Mm-hmm. In a you can say the same thing about any genre. Yeah. Like comedy, you can have horror in comedy, or but like, I don't know, I feel like when horror is the thread, it's actually a little bit more touching. Like it gets to people, it can get to people like inside, you know, like reach them.
Yeah, really, I think it makes people quite emotional, kind of to a degree more than you can with other genres. I think people have a very a deep kind of reaction. They definitely feel something, and whether that's, you know, a shock, terror, or sometimes the reaction can be a lot more like visceral than it can be with comedy writing or romance or something like that, perhaps. But of course, it's all subjective as well.
Yeah, these things are subjective.
Yeah,
because obviously, when one person reads a horror story or watches a horror film, and they're laughing the whole time, and the other person is cringing.
Yeah,
obviously it's subjective.
But I think also it's completely fascinating to observe people reacting to art in a different way. Because more often than not, we've got such a limited ability to understand another person. Like, we're really actually only understanding them based on the projection of how we see the world. So we're empathizing, we're putting ourselves in their shoes, but really it's our brain and their brain, and it's more often than not, you're way off. And you try to simplify the world based on your quite simplistic understanding of it. And when you share art with someone, that's the most magnificent time, is because really you can have a completely adverse reaction to the piece of art. You could be laughing while they're crying, and so on. And I think that's a magnificent thing about being a creator and consumer of art, that you're putting that ability, you're inducing moments of empathy sharing. And that's, I think that's so good.
I agree. Definitely agree with that. One thing I wanted to move on to, but I do want to get more into like mm-hmm. what you actually do, right? But I want to take a little step back, as I usually do in these shows. Take a little step back.
Way back.
It could be way back or it could be yesterday. I mean, it could be, you know, when you were born. Who knows? Before you were born. I know a little bit about you, but I'm going to pretend that I don't. Yeah. So when did you... So, like, what's your path to this point where you're, mm-hmm. you know, a poet? And what was your first memory of being, like, attracted to this art? Or, you know, when did you write your first poem? You know, so, like, that kind of thing. Like, if you can go back into time.
So, I guess... Yeah, funny one. I think it was when I was 6 years old. We were told to write a story about our weekend, and I just started making a few rhymes out of a few of the lines. I just thought that was a nice way to put it together, because for me, the talking about the weekend was quite boring, actually, and my weekend, that particular weekend, was very boring. So I think. A few rhymes was kind of brought it to life a little bit, added a bit of charm to it. And then really there was nothing for years. There was academic poetry writing, which I was good at, but of course it was just a burden to do well at English.
What do you mean it was a burden?
Well, it was just a formality, you know. I didn't get so much. I wasn't passionate about it as such. And then I went years just kind of turning my back on the both English creatively, and went deep into the world of finance. And, you know, I qualified as an accountant, did all those exams, and really kind of, I wouldn't say suppressed my creative writing, but I definitely turned my back on it for far too long. Really, it was when I think about it, I get filled with remorse, regret, but that's also pointless. But it came to a point where I needed to take some. I was working in a bank, and it was getting incredibly tiresome, and I was, you know, dreading a Sunday evening, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners have been in that situation. And I said, like, fuck it, gonna take 6 months off, gonna go to South America, travel around.
That's how it always starts.
It seems to be. And then there's moments like, you know, taking ayahuasca where...
Okay.
I think really...
That's for another episode.
Yeah, that could be another episode. But it's kind of key moments like that push you back, I think, closer to who you are, to your essence. And sometimes it can take a lifetime to get there, or some people never make it there. Mm. But I think it does take some really trigger events that can lead you back to what you should be doing, or what you should, or what really makes you feel good. And for me, that's writing creatively, or being creative, not necessarily even just writing, but just So that's basically the journey.
So. You went to South America. When was that?
So that would have been in 2013.
2013.
Yeah.
And now you're in Berlin. So what happened between? So you moved back to Ireland, or you
moved back to Dublin? Yeah, and got a job in a mental health hospital. I wasn't on the patient side. I was definitely on the other side. Just for the listeners,
you were on the other. You're gonna have to explain.
I wasn't a patient.
Oh, you weren't a patient. Okay. At first, I thought you said something else.
Yeah.
Okay. So you were not a patient.
I was not. No. Just to make that clear.
Yeah. Just to make everybody feel safe.
Yeah. Yeah. No. So I was actually working as an accountant there. God, it was totally grim. Mm. And that was really. That was the last straw.
It's quite dark also.
Yeah. It was a kind of a dramatic place to have a final realization that this was
You said dramatic. But it also sounded like you said Germanic, which also actually applies. But
with Germanic?
Germanic, yeah, because when you say something is Germanic, I believe that it can have this sense of like Gothic horror.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, oh, it's very Germanic.
Yeah, absolutely. Like if I could show you the little room, which was called the office that I had to work in.
It was called the office.
And it could have been. I shared it with this old lady who incessantly ranted about her family, and it was one of the worst experiences of my life.
Jeez, you seem to be getting emotional about it.
I think that I was just trying to burp there.
Yeah, no, I got that. But yeah, so do these kind of experiences, like, do you remember them, and do they inspire you still, or... Because, you know, even the dark times, they inspire us, you know?
Yeah, of course. And I'd actually would really like to write a story about that. That's high on my list of things to do. But I think it's, you know, it's these dark or these unpleasant experiences that are the catalyst for great creative writing and for ideas. Because you really... To create a situation or a story or a novel without having at least touched on those experiences yourself is really difficult. And I sometimes think, how do writers really do that? And how are they plucking this world and creating it from their imagination?
Maybe they're having podcast conversations and maybe just recording everything that they listen to.
That's probably it. Yeah. But isn't it? Have you ever thought about how people get to a point where they can create a whole world and create characters? Do they pick them up from scratch, and how do they do that? How are they able to really understand someone else's world?
Yeah, it's definitely fascinating. All kinds of artists. Again, like, that's why I do this artist series. Mm. So at this point, you're in Berlin, and you're a poet, and you've had all these realizations. So, how important is it, you know, to be here in Berlin? Because, you know, without me mentioning travel or location or anything, you know, your story sort of hinged on you leaving Dublin and going to South America, you know, to wherever you went. In South America, could have been China. It's really, but the point is that there was this location element, you know, and this moving from one place to another.
Yeah.
What is your take or feeling on, you know, the importance of a place in your experience and or in your imagination?
Yeah, I would say place is essential. I would say. I would say, a lot of creativity comes from imagination and through a dearth of a positive external environment.
Whoa. Used a lot of big words right there. A dearth of positive external environment.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to explain what you mean.
So, for instance, you hear about authors who grow up in, you know, poverty or... situations of abuse where they just retreat into their own world and then create this majestic world in their imagination, which then translates into a world of fiction. But there's also places of creativity which breeds creativity, like Berlin, Paris. All over the world there are these hubs which just make it easier for artists to be themselves and to not have to retreat into themselves, to create a symbiotic relationship with other artists as a stimulus, and that's a much more positive way than having to do it all through your own mind. And of course it's a way for minds to connect rather than just from the page or from the voice. They can connect in person and speak and talk through ideas, and that's a way to sculpt really interesting projects, no matter what that is, whether it's a movie, whether a song or anything, it can be anything. That's why podcasts like this are so important, and cities like Berlin are so fascinating as a platform to connect people and ideas.
Okay, so yeah, so definitely for, in your view, location is important. And mm-hmm. what is it? Is it sort of like we're, if we, I mean, I don't think that you're saying that, you know, staying in a place is bad, like staying in Dublin or, mm-hmm. or wherever. But it does sound like you're saying that there is some kind of a search process that happens, like where you're looking for something and you're in a place and you've been there for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. You've been there for so long, you know, you've grown up in Dublin, and at some point you're like, where I'm looking for something specific, and you're not finding it yet, so you go out on a search, basically.
Yeah, I mean, the reason that I one of the main reasons I moved to Berlin was for professional reasons, and, you know, to pay the bills. I work as a content creator and copywriter, and opportunities in that field are a lot stronger in Berlin than they are in Dublin. So this is also an important element to the journey of an artist, is figuring out where it's best to pay your bills, because there's some places that you will not survive as an artist. You won't survive in New York. You won't get by in London. You will struggle in Paris. In Berlin, you can do it. You can struggle. You can survive. So it's a springboard. It's a survival city, and it gives you the time to feed your thoughts, and it gives you the time to survive while just getting by on a pay packet that you manage. That could be anything. It could be selling your whatever in Tiergarten, which some people unfortunately have to do. I watched a good film actually about that.
What's it called?
A couple of days ago. What was that film called? The name escapes me. But yeah, the girl was in university in Berlin doing maths, and she couldn't afford to pay her rent. I don't know why I'm laughing at that.
Maybe I'm making faces. Because I know the movie.
That, Steve.
I think I know the movie.
You know it? I think it's quite a well known.
Is it called Fucking Berlin?
Could be. She ends up becoming a prostitute.
It's called Fucking Berlin.
Yeah. Yeah, and she ends up getting.
I love the title. I haven't watched the movie yet.
Yeah.
But I will. Yeah. I will. It's at actually. Some point.
It's a very interesting. Yeah. Apart
Seems
from the
depressing.
Fact that, well, yeah, I mean, it's I don't personally find that depressing.
Well,
I mean, but I could
the synopsis I read sounded quite.
It's
you know.
It's dark.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for that, but
yeah,
it's like one of those films you gotta choose the right moment to watch. It's like
exactly.
Not always in the mood to see a woman basically be like, well, actually, in this movie or in the synopsis that I read, I think she's happy to do this job, right?
Well, not really. Oh, is no. anyone happy to do that?
I don't know. That's what I'm questioning. So it's like
that's something you should interview next.
Yeah, I've thought about, you know, all kinds of interviews, but so far I haven't gotten to that. Yeah,
but
like,
I think
why would I personally do that? And like, seems a little exploitative for a white male to search out prostitutes and like talk about their life. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. Like, I don't know if it was. It would be hard to find, but like an artist who's had to do some, perhaps illegal stuff. And I think in Berlin, you'll probably find that's people you'll be able to find.
That's actually not a bad idea.
I think it'd be hard to listen to that.
but anyway. I feel like it would be too sensationalist if I was like seeking that out. Is what I'm saying. But
yeah, I know what you mean.
So how did we get on the topic of that movie?
Places in Berlin.
Ah, yes, the city. Yeah. So, you know, and I always say this podcast is not about Berlin. It's not about any particular place, but that's where we are. You know. And so I do think it's important.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're at the point where we should take a break, probably refill those beers, or at least my beer.
And, hell yeah.
That sounds like a plan.
I would like to talk to you more about why you do what you do.
Okay.
And maybe if you feel up for it, talking a little bit more about like how you actually live this life.
So, what? Say that again?
How you actually live as a... you know, not necessarily making money as a poet, but like how you live and survive so that you can do that. Because there are some situations where, and I feel like I don't always say this, there are people who want to be creative, but they can't because they are so...
Bogged down.
And we are lucky to be doing this podcast, and we're lucky to be able to call ourselves poets and so on.
Yeah.
So I really like to know, like, those things, and I really think it's an important conversation.
Big time, yeah.
Because also people might not realize that they could maybe break free from these chains and these things that bog them down.
So
let's take a quick break and then come right back.
Excellent, yeah. Football's adventure. I don't know why they chose me, sitting in a puddle of other balls. You're coming to the World Cup, see? They say you've got the gall. Day one, and I get thumped in the head. Kane, my boy, you'll score a brace, an injury time winner, and egos are fed. I'm put back in the bag, not brought to the race. It's then I feel hope by the words they repeat. Football's coming home, freed from the Russian concrete dome. Six goals they scored, and fearless they became. Expectations they soared. Even us in the grand could taste the fame. Football's coming home. Could it be true? Players hurtle past, mouths full of foam. And I'm one of them, I'm part of the crew. A boot smashes me in the face. The tall one again, with the large feet. He leaves me for dead and runs into space. I get smashed again. With the edge of a cleat. We are the forgotten ones left on the training ground. We did no wrong, no smoking guns, but in for a penny, in for a pound. Croatia stand no chance. Football is coming home. It's time we all had a merry little dance. But no, they lied. Football is abandoned, left out in the rain, far away. Like a silent garden gnome.
Very cool, man. So this is the world... so what was the name again?
I've already forgotten. Football's Adventure.
Football's Adventure. And it's from the point of view of a football.
Yeah.
Nice. I like it, Mike. I like it.
Yeah, I thought nobody really takes the football side, do they? It's always about the players... the glory of the coaches, but you know, the hard work is done in the training ground. Those little footballs getting kicked around, getting kicked day after day. They do the hard work.
So this is definitely humorous. This is definitely, you know, but yeah, I mean, it's definitely a poem. It's definitely a poem.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
And I think it's kind of, just I often like to take a different perspective. Yeah, try and give a voice to an inanimate object, or just like flip perspective in a different way. Even it goes back into what we were talking earlier on, how artists allow people to empathize with other people, or that can be other things as well, and. Like I'm a big believer in giving a voice to even stuff like plants. Sound like a complete hippie when I say that, but I think at some point there's everything is alive, and that's pretty important.
But rocks are not alive, and footballs perhaps. But I get what you're saying, and I like it. I mean, it's. You know, it may not be factual or science-based, but for sure... I mean, the plant thing is obviously true. Mm. They're alive, but if saying everything is alive, yeah, I mean, it might not be, you know, 100% hardcore science, but I like the meaning, you know?
Yeah, not everything is alive, but I mean...
But why not?
Yeah.
Why can't we just... I think in one of the previous... in the last artist episode, Federica Flux, she was like, why don't we welcome more magic into our lives, you know? And I thought that was a really good idea. It's like, why can't a football
have a... At some level, it is not alive in the sense that it's breathing or it's reproducing, but it's a live structure of molecules that is held together in a form that you could consider to be alive. Not by the definition of science, it doesn't breathe, it doesn't have senses, it's about how you define stuff as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So that brings me to what we were heading towards before the break. So I want to know a little bit more, and I think it's interesting for the listeners to know a little bit more about why you are writing and why you have chosen the specific things that you do, like writing poetry. You said you write short stories. Maybe you can say a little bit about, like, the split. Is it 50-50, 25-75? What's more important to you, poetry or short stories? And... yeah, why do you do those two things instead of, you know, writing a novel or making, I don't know, blowing glass or something?
Yeah,
and I don't mean
question.
That in a vulgar way.
All euphemisms aside, I think the split. Yeah, I would say I write more, like maybe say 70-30 short stories. I've also written, well, just one longer. I would say you would define it as a novella. It's in and around that word count range. I think that requires a different set of skills. And with anything, you really need to dedicate time to learning those skills. And that's definitely something that is a longer term aspiration, to write longer form of literature. As regards, actually, I was just about to say that probably the thing I like doing most is writing short comedy sketches. And that's what I really, really enjoy doing. And it's, I've only ever done this with one of my friends from Dublin. He lives in Dublin. So that kind of, he was like my, what would you say, creative partner, if you could say that. But yeah, a person that had the exact same idea of sketches and was able to kind of take an idea and run with it. And a lot of that was bringing it to life in person as well, I think. And words, it's just... I give some of these to other people, and through words, it's almost impossible to bring it to life. But if
it's almost impossible,
yeah, you're requiring the other person to really think the way that you do, like, and to imagine the situation as you imagine it, which is a tall order for someone to just take those words and have the exact same image of the scene materializing as you have in your mind. So I just really, that was just, you know, just for fun, I think. And we kind of often thought about doing a live production, but maybe it's something that will happen in the future.
So are you saying that your creative partner in Dublin, when you guys were sort of writing together or writing in partnership, there was some kind of creative differences that you couldn't get past? Or?
Yeah, no, not at all. That was really more that I left to go to Berlin. So, yeah, just really the location was the only thing that got in the way. It was funny because he was over to visit there last weekend, And we were just in stitches, you know, the whole time, and created a few more funny sketches that, yeah, one in particular, one that maybe I could talk to you about very quickly. It was a guy in a duty-free airport.
So no duties.
Huh?
No duties.
No duties.
Sorry. Terrible, terrible Irish accent joke.
And so the guy's up at the... There's a free whiskey tasting. And there's different varieties on option, the premium option. He's drinking away. Next thing, he turns... puts his back to the waitress, pinches his nose, and goes,
"Announcement: we've got a flight IE-406 to Berlin. Calling passenger McLaughlin. It's the last calling now. We're boarding at gate 14. Please come immediately."
And then he turns around and says, "Listen, I'm out of here. My flight's about to go. But thanks very much for all the free drinks. It was amazing." He gets his two duty free plastic bags, which he brought with him. He hasn't purchased a thing, nor did he ever intend to. Runs towards the gate, even though he's an hour early for his flight, and he does this every flight. So this is nothing new for him. And actually, the impression he does of the air hostess, he tilts his body, as you can see exactly what he's doing when she's looking down. Yeah, it's just little stuff like that really, it's you have to picture it the way that
that really you're saying that it's a very visual comedy.
Yeah,
I totally get that. And it sounds a little like you said, like sketch comedy, which is it can be, which I love, when it gets to be like just absurd things. Yeah. You know, the only thing is like when that kind of stuff, the absurdity happens in a sketch comedy, like for example Saturday Night Live, and then they're like laughing at their own jokes, I find that to be, it takes me out of it. Yeah. I really love absurd humor, but only when it's done with a straight face.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Yeah, I'm totally with you. Like for instance, Sacha Baron Cohen, who apparently he's got a new show coming out in a few weeks where he can just really put himself into that character and say the most absurd things, but with a complete...
You mean whatever character it is.
Whatever, yeah. His latest one, I don't know what he's going to call it, but I think it's fascinating to watch how he's able to keep a straight face, and that's... amazing.
So back to the topic of why poetry, why short stories. You did speak about this a little bit already, but maybe you can just say what's the difference. You know, I know personally, and I think a lot of listeners will have their own ideas of what is poetry. Like you've already given this idea of what's poetry, but like for you personally, why do you choose poetry, and then what are the other reasons that you choose short stories? You did mention this already, but I feel like the form, you haven't really talked about the form, like why those forms, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think it's, I mean, in my day job, I do a lot of copywriting, and being really, really concise and using words with precision is what poetry is all about. Every single word,
I agree.
Even every syllable, of course, every syllable makes a difference. And the six word can throw it out. The double syllable can throw it out. And obviously the rhyme is quintessential. I like that. I like that precision. I like precision of language. I'm very much into choosing words wisely, and that is a skill, and that is an art form in its own right. Short stories, to a lesser degree, the precision of the language, but for sure it's a completely different. And when I write, I like to be very free, and even sometimes grammatically free. And what I'm trying to do is, my sole mission is to bring people into that story, into that moment, as quickly as possible, and I don't care about the rules. I just care about the feelings the languages that the words convey. So I'm going to drag that person right into the scene, like the person that the wife is who's being abused, and her feelings, her terror, and the courage that it takes to flee that moment, and how I get to that, dragging that person into that parallel existence doesn't matter. But whereas with poetry, it's precision, choice, accuracy, conveying the meaning that you're after. So two different art forms.
I like that. I like that. I used to say something like, a novel is like a sledgehammer and a short story is like a knife. Is that too American? Too violent?
No, I like that. Nothing's too American.
That's what you said. I'm pretty sure that's not true. So, the biggest question of all. I mean, you've mentioned, you
what's
know...
What's the meaning of life?
What's the meaning of life? Actually, I did write down on my little pink card. A lot of the listeners possibly know that I write on little pink cards at the moment. On my little pink card I have here, it says, life. Living, making it work. That's what I wrote down on the break. So, I mean, that's not a question, but how do you make it work?
Yeah, well, it's a matter of juggling your time. At the end of the day, you've got to pay your bills while you're learning your craft. And as much as that might kill you to do that and drain your energy, it's a necessary evil, and you can only have the expectation that that is it's a gateway, it's a segue into doing it potentially full time. But then if you think about it, if you do it as a profession, will that corrode the love that you do? If you were like a commissioned poet, would you resent writing it? You probably would, and I would completely I would say corrode what you write. And I guess to a certain degree that's the same with writing novels as well, unless of course you've got a publisher who's willing to give you the freedom to let you get the job done, and it's only the top tier. So the rest of us are in some kind of halfway world where we have to do our day job and still do art in the rest of the time.
I like that you bring up the concept of kind of changing your point of view of your art. Excuse me, changing how you look at your art based on whether or not you're getting paid for it. I actually do think that this is an issue.
Yeah.
And it's something that I haven't really explored on the show yet. So maybe you could say more about not only that, but how did you get from... So I think that this question is what you just posed, but it's also... How do you go from, like you said, I think you said you were an accountant and then you became a writer. So like, what was that process like? Was there a struggle there, like trying to make money at some point? And like, how did you transition from accountant to writer? But then also, you know, if you can kind of weave it in there, you know, how do you really feel about making like this the change in point of view when you start getting paid for your craft? Like, have you experienced that yourself, or is that just like a hypothetical or something that you imagine?
Yeah, so I haven't been paid for any of this stuff I've written, so it's a hypothetical thing which I'm definitely interested in, but I wonder, and I've got a strong feeling that once you start getting paid to do something, then
that added pressure. Well, I guess it also depends on who your publisher is, you know. If they've got a tight deadline, if they've got somewhat creative control over the end product. There's a lot of unknown, there's a lot of factors there that dictate whether it may or may not impact your creativity. But I think if you reach the top of the pile, whatever you're doing, I think you have the freedom, you know, the creative control to do it as you want it to do it. On the lead up to that, and it may take years, you're going to be pulled and pushed in different ways, and it's going to be a pressure on you, and it's going to be really hard. You know, you won't have that full freedom to let loose in that way. Yeah.
So, do you think writers with huge amounts of success, like Stephen King, do you think that they're just mailing it in at this point, like they can just do whatever they want?
I don't know. I definitely don't think his recent stuff is anywhere near as good as his first, and I don't know if there was this change in employment status. I guess there was. Without knowing the details, I would say it became a point not ringing it in. I mean, when you get to that, he's obviously a genius at writing horror fiction, that's never going to fade away. but I think you don't put a creative person under pressure and expect them to produce the goods. It's not how it works to a certain degree. I mean, they'll do it, but they do it to the optimum that they're capable of.
So now I'm a little confused. So you're saying that the pressure of being at a high level is counterproductive to the creative process, or just any pressure? Because I feel like Stephen King's best work probably came when he was poor and he had the most pressure. And now, I mean, but maybe that's just my look, my out view on it, but my point of view. But,
I think in psychological terms, when a person feels stress, their creative faculties are impaired. I think that's what the studies show. I think it depends, obviously, in the individual, as everything does. Maybe some people thrive in situations where they feel stressed, maybe from financial difficulties. And that's an interesting thing. I think that could be discussed more in another moment. But I think it's probably a little bit of subjectivity whether it kills you, impairs you, or it stimulates you, because it's like fight or flight, similar idea, where you go and you say, all right, I gotta make this a success to pay the bills here, and does your brain go into a different mode then, or do you shut down and say, too much now, my creative brain is suffering here, I can't, I'm just, the stress is taking me down. It's curbing my enthusiasm.
I saw what you did there. No, but let's go back, bring it down to earth a little bit more. So, the question is, you know, how do you make it work? So, when you were transitioning from,
I'm still a man.
That's. That's not a great joke, in my opinion, but you know, I'm just going to leave it at that. But I'm going to ask you another question. When you were changing careers from accountant to writer, poet, what were the sort of struggles or feelings of? What were the challenges that you felt? Were there any challenges?
Oh, big time. A litany of different challenges. There's cognitive dissonance, for one.
Can you say more about?
Yeah, so knowing that you've spent so much time studying all these exams. For Kennedy, it's 14 different exams, a lot of time, a lot of effort, and then to leave that is never, it's a never easy thing to do. There's also the expectations from your peers and your parents to continue on at the more conservative, salubrious types of career that are and known to be stable and reliable and consistent, the opposite of, I guess, the genesis of the artist's journey, which is the opposite. Instability, it's erratic paydays, it's struggle and strife, and it's, you know, parents always want something that's very... stable and reliable for their kids, but the artist actually kind of needs the opposite of it. So there's that tension, that struggle between what the society demands of a person to get on and to be a success. And I'm doing the finger thing when I say that, because everyone's got a different definition of that. But yeah, it takes that's a real huge challenge.
So, but in your personal experience, how did that manifest itself? Like, did you, you know, contemplate suicide? Did you murder somebody? You know, what was your personal experience? Like, you said this is all very clear, what you said in a very abstract way, but how did you feel? Was there a particular challenge that you can remember? If you can't remember, that's totally fine, obviously, but... I think it's very important to, you know, when I personally look back at what I've been trying to do with my, let's say, artistic career, for lack of a better term, I can look back and I can say, well, in this moment, in this period of my life, I had a very specific challenge. Was there anything specific that you can recall, or, you know, stories that would kind of like highlight how difficult this is? Like, so you said you moved from Dublin to Berlin, and, you know, to be in a more sort of creative place where you can be more, you know, free. So was it totally butter? Was it like easy, or was there... Maybe you can talk about the language barrier or things like that. Like, what were the challenges and obstacles that you faced?
Yeah, I mean, there was quite a lot. Like, for one, I was sleeping on the floor of my friend's apartment for the first month, on a shitty little mattress. And yeah, it's, you know, like... Not earning a decent salary, earning just a very kind of very low income, which was probably a third of what I was on, and adjusting to that lifestyle change. And that was, you know, that's a huge period of adjustment. But it was for sure that was difficult. And moving to a new city is always tricky, especially in a country that doesn't speak the same language. It's not easy. You've got to build a new network, a network of artists, which, yeah, I'm still haven't really done that. Especially in a place where, it's German speaking, it can be difficult.
Did you have a long period of adjustment for German, or?
Yeah, well, I spoke a bit of it in university, and so I knew it at a kind of academic level, but speaking it is a different ball game. But there's no more motivation than when you really want to understand and the people and, like, get in the creative scene. You need to know the language, although of course in Berlin there's a lot of English speaking, there's a huge community there, which kind of makes it easier than in certain other places. Which do you feel that yourself?
So I'm the interviewed is now. Personally, I never fear language, but I think I'm an outlier. I go, you know, headfirst into linguistic situations that I have no qualifications for. So, which is what I did in Berlin. I had zero German, and I just dove, however you want to say it, headfirst, face first, nose first.
It was,
and I took a nosedive.
You took a nosedive.
I took a nosedive. It was, you know, it's obviously my German is. Like, but I don't want to talk too much about myself. I try not to talk about myself in these episodes. Otherwise, it would be, if I did that in every episode, it would kind of get a little monotonous. Always hearing about Steve, and it's like, it's really more about the guest, which that's you. I guess we should probably mention that it's getting louder in here, but I don't think that that's a big issue because we are sort of coming to the end of this episode. Yeah. We usually do an hour. I guess the only thing left that I would have to really ask is, from your experience, from your struggles, from the challenges that you faced, do you have advice? It doesn't have to like actually be advice, but do you feel like there's some story that you can tell us that would be sort of advice or an example for other people who want to sort of either change their life to an artistic life or to
proceed
further?
I would say if you're a young person listening, so, you know, a teenager, I would say really think about what makes you happy. I remember when I was in school, I absolutely loved English, but the school that I was in and the family that I was from didn't deem the study of English to be worthy. It wasn't...
It was not salubrious.
What's that?
Salubrious.
Yeah, exactly. And it... So I think it's to be... So for my advice would be in two parts. One, if you're a young person and you're trying to decide, say on a university course, just go with whatever makes... Like, really sit down, climb to the top of a mountain, just sit there with yourself, not friends, on your own, and think really about the moments in your life that make you the happiest, whether that's debating or talking about politics or doing social things in your community, and whatever that is. And it might be a few things, but try and blend or combine as much of them into a course. Just make that your life, because that will make you happy, and you will subsequently be good at that. As an older person who's made a certain career choice, I said it's always time, there's always possibilities, it's not as hard as it seems to segue. There will be a struggle and strife, but it'll only be a transitionary period. And once you get to a point where you're doing something that's more in tune with your nature, then the money will flow, and the money will always come when you're doing something that you're passionate about. Because if you're doing something and you're just going through the motions and you're not really, your heart's not really in it, you will make money. You may make a lot of money, but you won't be a success at that. And it won't make you happy, which is, above all, the most important thing.
I think we should leave it at that. Happiness is, above all, the most important thing. Thanks again for being on the episode, on the show, this milestone episode, episode 10, number 8 of the artist series. Just thanks, Mike.
Yeah, thank you very much. Happy to be here.